In a land of myth and a time of magic, the destiny of a great kingdom rests on the shoulders of a young boy. His name...
Welcome to Hype episode X. We're so excited to get started. My name is Selena. I have Pam here with me, and we are so excited to get started on our big, long anticipated Merlin rewatch podcast special series. I believe is its official title. And we've been talking about doing this for so long. If you're not a listener of our regular show, we run the official or the flagship show for Hypeable.com called Hype, where we talk about the most recent entertainment news and the TV shows we watch and the movies we watch and the books we read and the music we listen to and all of that. And Merlin is both myself and Pam's, or one of our all-time favorite series. We'll get into this as the show goes along, but it's one of the first big things we really wrote about on Hypeable back when Hypeable started. It's been one of the things we've talked the most about, and even though we've never really had a reason to bring it up on the main show before, we've always kind of found ways to bring it in because we love it so much. And there used to be, once upon a time, on Hypeable, a Merlin podcast called Talks of Camelot, which Pam hosted and which I joined at some point, where they went through all the episodes, but then the show ended and we kind of just, we moved on to other things. And it's been 5 years now and we are finally ready to go back and discuss it from the very beginning, starting with this episode, The Dragon's Call, the pilot episode. Now, some things we want to talk about before we really get started. First of all, it's important to state at the top of the show that there will be no spoilers in this podcast. We want to do a rewatch slash watch for the first time with all of you guys, which means that whether you've seen it before or you're coming to it for the first time, you are able to watch it along with us without worrying about having your experience ruined. Now, obviously, myself and Pam are big fans, and so we will be doing a little bit of like speculation. We'll be doing a little bit about comparing Merlin to the legends and all of that stuff. But just know that it's going to be newbie friendly, this podcast, so you don't need to worry about that. Okay. We do have some other stuff to get into before we start talking about the episode, but I just wanted to check in and say hi to Pam because I haven't heard her voice yet. So I'm like, is this a one-person podcast? What's happening?
It might be. I was just going to say that this is like a true testament to our willpower, not being able to talk about things that are going to happen because, you know, obviously we're watching for the second time and there are some things that even the pilot, you're just like, wow, like, this is, yeah. Like, I have thoughts, like, they're, and I can't talk about them because it relates to other things. So hopefully this is as fun for you guys as it is for us. I'm doing great. I'm really excited. It's kind of surreal that we're finally doing this because we've been talking about it for a really long time by popular demand.
Yeah.
It's finally happening.
I mean, if you're listening to this, you're probably, you might be one of our listeners who has been requesting this for a long time. I think a lot of people who followed us on Hypeable know how obsessed we are with Merlin and have kind of like, either they are too obsessed or they have been infatuated with our obsession.
Also, shout out to the Merlin Tumblr fandom for fueling our inability to let this go. I feel like we've definitely, like, I at this point, like, bless the rest of the Hypeable staff because they just, like, let us do whatever we want. They're like, those poor girls, they're still traumatized.
Yeah, Merlin is the kind of show that sneaks up on you. You know, this pilot episode might not fully relay the experience that you're about to have. Although I think it does actually a really good job. I think this is a really good episode, but we'll get into that a little bit later. But yeah, you're in for a wild ride. And, you know, it's been 5 years, as I said, since the show ended in 2012. And I don't think either me or Pam have gone back and rewatched it after the finale. So it's really fun to re-experience it with fresh eyes and to sort of see, like, did it live up to the hype? You know, are we going to spend 60 podcast episodes talking about something that isn't as good as we remember? But I think based on the pilot episode, I don't think we need to worry about that. I'm very excited. I think my younger self was not mistaken in the quality of the show. So my older, more sophisticated self is certainly not too sophisticated to enjoy it. So I'm super excited. Anyway, we have so much to get through. And before we go any further, we want to remind you or tell you for the first time about the contact information, because a big part of this show is listener feedback. We love hearing from you guys. We love getting rebuttals or, you know, extra comments, bring up things we didn't think about, respond to something we thought about, just share your own opinions on the show and the episode. And obviously, as we talked about, because this is spoiler free, then, you know, your comments have to be spoiler free as well if you want them read on the show. You can always send us like some thing that you want to tell us and then we can just respond to you. But if we're going to respond on air, then we have to keep it spoiler free. But we do actually have some people who've sent in comments for this first episode, but we would love to hear what you think about, you know, episodes to come. Next time we're doing this, we're discussing episodes 2 and 3. So if you have thoughts on those, or if you have any sort of retroactive feelings about the pilot episode of Merlin or anything like that, then you can send them in to us via email, which is hype@hypeable.com. So that's hype@hypeable.com. You can also find us on Twitter, which is @hypeablehype. You can send us a you know, just a tweet or a private message on there. You can also find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com, and on Instagram, which is @hypeablehype. And then finally, you can go on Hypeable itself, which is hypeable.com, which is where me and Pam both write and where the podcast episodes are posted. And at the moment, I just wanted to say that for me, the comments don't work on the podcast episodes, so I won't see them. If there are comments, I can't see them. So so maybe don't post comments on there, but you can still go on there and check it out and download and subscribe and all that stuff. So yeah, we hope that to hear from you in any of those ways. And I think it's high time that we get into talking about episode 101, Dragon's Call. Are you ready, Pam, to revisit the magic?
Oh, I'm so ready.
It's so weird. We're finally here. My gosh.
I know. It only took 5 years.
It literally did. Okay, so Merlin, for all of you newbies who are watching for the first time and might not know, you will have known if you've seen this episode, but anyway, Merlin was a BBC show that ran from 2008 till 2012 in its original run. It had 5 seasons. The series had 4 showrunners. Johnny Capps and Julian Murphy are usually credited, but it was actually also created by Jake Michie and Johnny Capps. And Johnny Capps is... No, wait, Johnny... Julian Jones. I'm sorry, I wrote Johnny Capps twice. But Julian Jones was the fourth creator who also wrote this episode. The series stars Colin Morgan as Merlin, Bradley James as Arthur, Angel Coulby as Guinevere, Katie McGraw as Morgana, Anthony Head as Uther, and Richard Wilson as Gaius. And I believe a little fun fact to start the show might be how we both got into it. We talked a little bit about this. We've talked about this on previous episodes, but it might be fun to do a little bit of a rundown. So Pam, did you start watching it when it first aired on BBC America? Why did you start watching? What were your sort of initial reactions to this episode?
Good question. You know, what's so funny is that I feel like my starting point with Merlin is really fuzzy. It in a lot of ways feels like it's been a part of my life for so long that it's almost like Merlin has always been there. But a little bit of a fun fact that maybe some of our American listeners will know is that Merlin was actually, it aired on NBC for a bit here, but it could never really find its footing. NBC is like a, you know, basic cable television network. And I want to say that they had it like on Fridays at like 9 p.m., which is where shows go to die. And that was during the first season. So clearly it was not the right home for Merlin. And so Merlin ended up on my radar, like all other fandoms that I've been a part of later in life, mainly because of Harry Potter. Harry Potter was the first fandom that I really participated in online and made a lot of friends through, also online, one of whom was a girl who also happened to be Welsh that was really into this show called Merlin. And so she introduced me to Merlin after I was finished watching Skins. Like I just finished the first season of Skins and I was looking for something to watch. She was like, not related at all, but maybe you should try Merlin. And so, yeah, it must have been around like 2008, 2009, somewhere online, probably on a dodgy website, because there was no way really to watch it here in America. And so I watched the first season and I kind of forgot about it until maybe 2010, somewhere around there. Yeah, it must have been 2010. I was on Netflix and I refound it again because Netflix had all of the seasons, or not all of the seasons, but like the three seasons that were out at that point. And yeah, that's like my Merlin origin story.
When you were a young girl. I have a very clear memory of when I started watching the show, because I hated the show on first sight. I absolutely despised it. I was living at home with my mother and my little brother, and we were, you know, the new show was starting. They knew that I loved the Arthurian legends. I've always been like a nerd for King Arthur and Guinevere and Merlin and all of that stuff. And so a new TV show was starting, and they were like, it's going to be a family thing, we can all watch it together. And I was, at that time in my life, back in like 2008, I was like, you know, sitting on our house computer using HTML to design all my early websites. So I was busy, guys. I didn't have time for like pedestrian thing as a television show. But so I sat down to watch it and I was furious at how much they changed. Like I could not wrap my head around, and this is so funny now, right? Because I could not wrap my head around the fact that Merlin and Arthur were the same age, that, you know, when we first met Guinevere and Morgana, I was like, but Guinevere is the queen. Why is she a servant? I don't get it. And I just got so mad at like how it wasn't the story I knew. And then I think also, you know, because we've watched the next two episodes as well, so I've like been rewatching it recently, and I think one of the things that really turned me off was how angry the show makes you. And this is not like a criticism of the show, but, you know, because how unfair it is, you know, like Merlin, that he has all this power and the secret and no one believes him and he is treated so unfairly, and Uther is such a jerk. And, you know, I was a big Buffy fan, so it hurt your heart when Giles is not the good guy. And it just made me so mad. And even like rewatching it all these years later, it still kind of makes me mad. So I can sort of put myself back in my old shoes and remember how frustrated I was.
It's funny you mention that, because I felt a similar thing. But I think that instead of being angry and turning it off, I was like, I need to see. I really hope this like poor Merlin gets his due justice, yeah. Basically, so I had to keep watching it. Actually, it enraged me in the same way that I was enraged coming back to Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone as an adult, you know, not reading at 11 years old. Came back to the series in like my early 20s and could not get past the first few chapters with the Dursleys, because it just hit me so hard. It's like
so unfair.
You realize how much abuse this person has gone through, and it breaks your heart, you know? Maybe not, it's not as extreme in the dragon's call, because you do get a sense that Merlin's come from a loving home. His mother sends him away because he needs something better. But at the same time, it is like, it's frustrating that you can clearly get a sense too that he's never felt like he belongs anywhere.
Yeah, right. It is, there is a little bit of that. And then I think, you know, but it was enough to actually stop me watching initially. And so I kind of, my first impression of Merlin was having the audio on in the background while my mother and brother watched it and me trying my best to drown it out. Because it was like, yeah, I don't know. I just, it wasn't my time. But then, like, I think a few years later, I actually moved to Wales to study at the university, first in Aberystwyth and then in Cardiff. And, you know, when you live in Cardiff, which is where Merlin is filmed along with Doctor Who a lot of the time, and Cardiff is a small town, and you begin to sort of see the actors everywhere, and you begin to, you know, you go to the woods and you're like, oh, wait, that looks familiar. We'll talk a little bit later about where the show was filmed, because obviously it was also filmed in France. But yeah, so you kind of begin to get a little bit more of like a personal connection to the show. Also, because Wales, like, you know, obviously one of the reasons I wanted to study in Wales is because I was still like obsessed with the Arthurian legends. So I wanted to go to where the dragons were, right? And literally there were some dragons there in the form of the actors on the show. So like, I think I just kind of was reinvigorated to give it another chance. And at that time I had started working on Hypable, and I started covering it for Hypable, and I just fell back into it, and I just fell completely in love with it. And this is when, you know, me and Pam, our first big project on Hypable together back in 2011, 2012, was we started planning and doing a big day, a month of Merlin special article series, where we just produced a bunch of content about Merlin, because it was wrapping up. It's coming to an end in the fifth season, and we wanted to send it off in style. And it was such a great experience, and we really did a lot. We did some interviews, we did some features and stuff like that, and we just kind of began to see the show in a new light, I think. And so it's always kind of, that experience has made it all the more special, I think. And now we're back. So let's talk about The Dragon's Call, 20 minutes later. So the episode was officially released on September 20th, 2008. It was, as I said earlier, it was written by Julian Jones, one of the four co-creators, who actually ended up writing a total of 27 episodes of the series, including the second part of the series finale. So that is kind of a little bit of a gut punch that he ends up bookending the story in this way. The episode was directed by James Hawes, who ended up only doing 3 episodes of the show, the first 3. And I think that when you look at it now, I think there are some visual choices that he made that are very evident and that don't really happen in the same way. I'm thinking specifically about the really fast, like slow-mo, quick slow-mo movements to or away from the characters. That happens a lot in these episodes, and I think that might be a James Hawes touch. And just to bring us up to speed, the synopsis is, the teenaged warlock Merlin is sent by his mother to lead an anonymous life in Camelot under the care of the court physician Gaius. On his arrival, he sees the execution of a man accused of sorcery, or susery, as the king Uther Pendragon has banned susery on pain of death. A hideous old woman, the condemned man's mother and a sorceress, vows revenge before vanishing. Merlin realizes he must keep a low profile. He then discovers the great dragon, who tells him that he must protect Arthur until he becomes king and guide him to unite Albion. Merlin disagrees, seeing Arthur as an obnoxious bully. At a feast, the disguised mother of the sorcerer casts a spell on the guests and attempts to stab a defenseless Arthur. Merlin interferes, saving Arthur's life, and is rewarded with a position as Arthur's manservant. All right, that's the episode. First impressions. I want to talk a little bit about how you felt seeing it originally and how you felt rewatching it now. So why don't we start with the beginning?
I mean, watching it now, I think that anytime this happened to, we've done rewatches for a few other shows on this podcast. We've done it for Gilmore Girls. Does it count? Does The 100 count as a rewatch? Kind of, because it was,
sure.
We've done it for The 100 too. Yeah. And, but I think like specifically with Gilmore Girls, cause I guess that's like the closest I can akin this to, cause it was a show I watched a while ago. There's always kind of this nagging fear in the back of your brain that it's not going to hold up, like the magic won't be there. And so I was really happy that like the pilot still, I don't know, it just still brings me much joy. There's some strange sense of comfort that you feel as you see Merlin walking towards the screen for the first time, because it's like, you know, if you're rewatching it again, you're like, oh my gosh, like the magic is starting over, and like there's so like this big journey lies ahead of us. I think that was really great in terms of like a symbolic moment of like Merlin starting his journey, and the journey is about to unfold before our eyes and stuff like that. I don't think that weight was necessarily there the first, like the first time I saw the pilot. I think that for me, the thing that made me keep watching, and this is kind of jumping ahead, was just like the chemistry between all of the characters, for sure. And that's still there upon rewatch. But yeah, I don't think that, like, I can't say that I was like necessarily hooked right away the first time I watched it. But as the pilot goes on, you're intrigued mostly by the relationships that are starting to form.
Totally agree. I totally agree. I mean, I kind of already said how I felt about it the first time, but rewatching it now and rewatching it ever since, because it's not the first time I've rewatched it. It's just the first time since 2012. So absolutely. I think this episode, as you said, I was a little bit worried that we were embarking on this great rewatch and we actually either wouldn't like it or like wouldn't be able to like defend it almost, you know what I mean? Because Merlin is a little bit of a special show, and it has a lot of ups and downs and extremes. But I think what makes Merlin great and what this episode does right off the bat, and which it carries through, which makes sense, which the writer has stayed on and done so many episodes, that it, the threads of the character relationships and the threads of who the characters are, what they want, what their fears and aspirations are, and why they're drawn together, particularly Merlin and Arthur, but I think in some ways it's also true for Gwen, a little bit less Morgana at this point, but there's enough of her that she's intriguing to us. I think that there are some building blocks that also obviously have a lot to do with the actors and the chemistry between the actors and how, you know, how close they got so quickly. I think that is what sort of will make sure that this pilot and this show is sort of eternally good, you know, that it doesn't age. Yes, the special effects age, but like that's not the point, you know. The point is the story, right? And the story holds up for sure. And I think when you rewatch it now, there's so many hidden gems of information, and there's surprisingly little that I think they ended up retconning. I think most of what we are introduced to in this episode ends up holding true of the whole show. And I think that is really special.
It was kind of hard. I was going to say just very quickly, it was kind of hard, like the first time watching it just as a concept, Merlin was very hard to wrap my brain around.
Yeah. Yeah, because it was so different. Yeah. And now it's like, that's the norm now, isn't it? Like, it's hard to imagine anything else.
Like I couldn't wrap my brain around one. Like, I could wrap my brain around if they had said, we're going to make an Arthurian legend show and Arthur's going to be 20 and Merlin's going to be 60. I'd be like, yeah, okay, that's fine. You know, but he's still Prince Arthur. Mm-hmm, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. I can deal. That makes sense. But for them to say, oh, no, but Merlin's also going to be the same age, like, that really was hard to wrap my brain around. And I feel like if they hadn't sold that so well in terms of, like, the acting, then I would never have been able to continue with the show.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's when we get to talking about the characters. It has a lot to do with how they introduce the characters. It has a lot to do with how they balance Arthur to not make him totally unlikable, you know, even though he is technically totally unlikable. So that is really well done, I think. And I think sort of rewatching it now as well, knowing, not only knowing how it ends, but just knowing how the whole story unfolds, I think it is easier to like the characters too, you know, like it's not that they weren't likable, but it's easier to understand. I think Merlin has a little bit of like Order of the Phoenix syndrome in this episode. He's very emo, you know, and Arthur is obviously presented at the top of his arc, so he is not anywhere near the King Arthur that the legends has taught us to expect. But I think just knowing their plans for the story and how it unfolds, I think it sort of makes me more lenient or more like accepting or happy about what the characters are at this point, you know. And Gwen especially, I think Gwen is just I just love her so much, you know, and it's just great seeing where they all started. Yes, no, I think this is a good time to start talking about Merlin,
yes,
the character.
Yes, I agree.
Your favorite? Is that a spoiler to say that he is your number one?
No, it's not. You know, I don't know if we ever talk about like what gravitates us to the characters that we do tend to like. I don't know if we've ever discussed that on Hypeable, on Hype. Maybe that's a good like bonus discussion at some point, you know? But I am a sucker for the reluctant hero, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm a huge sucker. Like, in Harry Potter, too, like, my favorite character is actually Harry. Like, nobody's favorite character really is Harry, but he's mine, and not just because the books are named after him, but just because, like, he almost can't with his destiny, but he needs to figure out how to fulfill it anyway.
Yeah.
Like, the tortured hero that grows into himself is definitely my Achilles heel.
Mm-hmm,
so
He is wonderful in this first episode. I think Colin Morgan, I mean, obviously Colin Morgan is a fantastic performer, and he's gone on to do a lot, and he is great in all his roles. I think what he brings to Merlin is this kind of just joyful, wide-eyed, just innocence and excitement that I think a show like this really needs, because, you know, this is a family show, but it's a British family show, so it's a little bit edgy, and I think there are a lot of big emotions and a lot of big scary, if not even like physically scary, but just like emotionally scary. It's a very intense show, you know, under its shiny exterior, but I think what carries it through is that he just is so honest in his performance as Merlin. And I think in this first episode, you are allowed, like, this character gives you permission to revel in the excitement of it all, despite all the stakes, despite the fact that the episode literally opens with a death, a terrible, tragic, unjust, horrible execution. Merlin being excited to be there means that you as an audience feel like you are allowed to be excited to be there. And I think that's something that a lot of medieval media kind of doesn't really manage, is that we as a cult, not to get like too sidetracked here, Pam did warn this was going to happen, but you know, we as a culture are so fascinated with the medieval period, and I feel like the media does the best it can to remind us of how terrible it really was. So, you know, medieval media is always really edgy and really filthy and really, like, you can almost smell it through the television, you know, but this medieval story is cleaner in a way. It's more fun, it's more of an adventure. And Merlin the character embodies, because he's the newcomer who comes into this world with us, he embodies the sense of excitement, and I really think that is one of the things that makes Merlin so great. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, and I think that you're right, because even as like the pilot goes on and he sees the worst of Camelot, he's still excited.
Still just so happy.
Like, there's that scene where he gets thrown in the cellar after he meets Arthur for the first time, and he's just excited the guy has got him out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes. Yeah, he's so, and that's another thing that's interesting about Merlin the character. You know, I kind of talked about Order of the Phoenix syndrome, is that he is also a teenager. Like, he is so emotional, both ecstatically happy, but also just lowest of the low, mopey and sad. And I think that's actually another thing that I think is clear watching it as an adult, is how much like teenagers these characters all behave, and especially Merlin. I think they do such an excellent job of encapsulating the teenage spirits in these characters. And so it's interesting to, it is a little bit of a roller coaster, I think. And again, with allowing himself to wear his emotions on his sleeve, this is a very raw performance. And a little bit overwhelming emotionally,
it
I think.
Is, yeah. And I think that that's what a huge reason why Merlin is so likable from the get-go. Write in and let us know how you felt, because I feel like it definitely, just in the way that, that Colin Morgan plays him, and also probably in the way that it was written in the script, like, he's like likable. Like, you want to like him, you want to root for him, even when he's kind of being a little big-headed in terms of his skills. Like, you still want to like him, you know?
Mm.
Yeah. Or you still do like him.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Arthur. My favorite overall, it shifts throughout the show who my favorite is, but it's definitely Arthur over the whole arc. So when we meet Arthur, Prince Arthur, this is another character who is instantly so unlike his legend, because we expect Arthur to be this grand king who is good, and Arthur is a prince who is a prat. And yet, you know, this is something that I wanted to bring up. This is something that I noticed on this rewatch in particular, is that Arthur is not actually that bad. You know, I think we kind of, when you watch for the first time, you might be really put off, and I certainly was. But rewatching it now, just sort of paying attention not only to Bradley James, who is obviously very likable, which helps, but also just the way that he responds to Merlin. I think I always thought, and this, I want your thoughts on this too, I always thought that he like genuinely wanted to cause Merlin harm, but rewatching it now, I don't think he does. I think he's bored, and I think Merlin is exciting and new and challenges him, and I think Arthur kind of likes that. And I think when you see it in that scene when they are fighting in the market, and the guards come to take him away, and Arthur's like, no, you know, you don't need to do that, that's fine. I think there's a sense of sportsmanship about Arthur. He plays fair, and I think when he is antagonizing Merlin, it is because he thinks that he has found someone who is a little bit more of a worthy opponent, wits-wise, than the yes-men he surrounds himself with, you know?
Yes, I totally agree. And I guess this is where I'll inject our first cryptic tease of what's to come. But I think, like, as we move further into the series, like, you will realize that he is looking for somebody to... that somebody that isn't afraid to challenge him just as a man, and not necessarily as like, I'm challenging the prince, but I'm going to let you win, you know? Cause
yeah.
So he's definitely, that is something that I think he desires. And even though he's probably a little bit embarrassed that Merlin shows him up, if he's still fine with it, because that's ultimately he craves that kind of relationship in some way.
Yeah, he is. We see this more in episode 2, we'll get back to it more, but he is, I think, he, unlike Uther, who wants absolute control and doesn't want to hear people who disagree with him, Arthur wants to surround himself with people that challenge him and make him better. And yeah, I think in some ways at this point Merlin is already kind of fitting that mold for him. And I think when he says, you know, the line that is so layered and can be read in so many ways, when he says, there's something about you, Merlin, I think that might be what it is. You know, I think he might be saying, okay, there's something, there's a spark of something that I am looking for in the people that I want to surround myself with that I haven't really found anywhere else yet. I think arguably he also has found it in Morgana, but that might be a discussion for another time, the way they challenge each other. he might find it in other people. We'll see down the line. But I think this might be what it is. And obviously, I think there's also a shade of he is maybe sensing their shared destiny a little bit too. But I think mostly it's, hey, here's someone who doesn't just fall at my feet and does whatever I tell them to. And that's actually maybe exactly what I want, even though I didn't know that's what I wanted.
Yes. Yes, totally. It's so funny because I think that going back to what you said about how the first time you saw the pilot, like, you hated Arthur. And I think that that's what you're meant to do. But watching it back now, it's like, oh, you could make excuses for poor Arthur. You know, he doesn't know any better. He's like, this is all he knows. He's a product of his circumstances.
But that's to say that what he does isn't anyway okay, no. But it's true. Like, that is what it is. And I think the motivations of the character stand out so clearly that it's hard to ignore now. It's hard to write off his behavior and just say, oh, he's a jerk and he is going to, like, grow over the course of the series, because obviously that's what it's setting up that he will. But I think even now, even in his actions that are terrible, I think the kind of the way that he is expressing his privileged position and his authority and his overconfidence and just self-obsession, I think you can see the root of where it all comes from. And I think you can see how he's already fighting against it subtly. So I love that. I loved going back and seeing that character in a little bit of a different light. So it's not like the character changes as much as different parts of him become more dominant. So that's interesting. Another character we meet in this episode that is not who she is in the Legends is Gwen. Most people call me Gwen. My name is Guinevere. Oh, wink, wink. I would say the most different from her legend, because she's not a princess. You know, she's not a queen. She is a maid, and she is Lady Morgana's maid. Morgana, who obviously in the Legends is Morgan, you know, the evil sorceress. And here she is Lady Morgana. She lives in the castle, and she is the main sort of lady, royal-ish lady, and Gwen is in her service. And I think that that is a very interesting choice. You know, Gwen and Arthur don't have anything to do with each other in this episode. Gwen and Merlin certainly do. And she is the sweetest character. Like, I just want to start off by saying how wonderful this character is, and how wonderful her scenes with Merlin are.
Yes, that's definitely, like, one of the scenes that I loved rewatching most was the scene where they meet and Merlin's in the stocks. I just think it's so sweet. And it gives you a really good sense for where, like, these two specific characters are starting off. And I think that, mm-hmm. like, you know, one of the things that I think that you'll hear us touch on again and again and again is that the truly wonderful thing that aging all of these characters down does is that it makes them relatable. And you can relate to them, because it's really hard to relate to Legends, but if you make them human and you humanize them and you do that by showing you where they start out, it's just so much easier to resonate with how they're feeling or how they act. And I think that Gwen is just she's so pure, and you can just tell mm-hmm. that she's just so good, and she sees the good and she sees the injustice. Like, that she has that whole line where she says that she thinks, like, that Merlin was brave for standing up to Arthur, and that she thinks Arthur's a bully. So you can already kind of see those little traces of who she could be if she were in a higher position, but she's just not there yet.
I agree. I think, you know, honestly, again, not to danger of getting sidetracked, but I think that's one of the things that makes Merlin such a watchable show and story, despite all of the, like, window dressing of, as you'll see, like, ridiculous stories of the week and, like, what have you, is that and BBC shows do this very well, is how, even though only Merlin is a newcomer to this world, and not even then, because he's lived in this world, he's not like a time traveler, you know, but even though all these characters are, we're meeting them at home, so to speak, we are still meeting characters that have a long way to go. and that we get to grow with them. Whereas I think sometimes shows that don't catch me as much, what they do is they introduce characters that are already where they're supposed to be, you know, emotionally, mentally, physically. This is who they are. This is what they do. Boom. Now you're in their world and you just have to kind of keep up the best you can. I am not super attracted to those kinds of stories because I don't feel the stakes of them. I just feel like I'm a like passive observer of a story that is just carrying on, if that makes any sense. I think what Merlin does, and I think what Doctor Who did with Rose, and really with every companion, but particularly with Rose when it started out, is that it lets you know that these are characters that have arcs, that have growth, that are not the people that they are quote-unquote meant to become, but you are going to see them get there, and it's going to feel like it's going to make sense. Their emotional development is going to make sense to you. And I think it's so exciting about Merlin, and so genius in how they set this up, was that technically we know where they're supposed to end up. It's so different now that we are not sure that it's that they're actually going to get there. But in some, like in the back of our minds, we have a vague blueprint of like, oh wow, if this character has to get from here to here, then a lot of crap is going to have to go down. And whether or not that goes down, obviously, you're going to have to wait and see. But I do think that helps you connect to these people as they are now, because you know they're not done growing in whatever direction. And I think that's very special. And I think you see that with Gwen especially. And I think you see it with Gwen and Merlin's relationship a little bit, because here you have these two characters who, I mean, let's face it, there is shipping potential here. And who would have thought, you know, Merlin and Gwen, and you don't know where the story is going to go with them, but it seems so genuine and real, you know?
Yeah, and she, you know, they planted the seed, like, undeniably. There's that, what's that in the, when they're at the ball or the celebration? And she's like, I prefer more normal than you. Like you.
Yeah.
It's just like, and we're definitely meant to maybe ship them. And that's kind of like a big curveball too, because I remember watching the pilot for the first time and thinking, oh man, like, is this how it's going to go down? Because like, not a spoiler, but in the original Arthurian legends, you know, Arthur's downfall comes after he is betrayed by Guinevere and Lancelot, who are supposed to be his two most trusted individuals, and then they go off together, his wife and his best friend. And so I remember thinking, like, is this a possibility? Maybe it is a possibility, you know? Mm-hmm. It's still, I guess it's still a possibility if you're watching for the first time. You never know. But it's like, I mean, they're already setting up this idea that maybe Gwen doesn't end up with Arthur.
Mm-hmm. And it just makes it so exciting to watch and stressful when you're watching for the first time. I guess I just wanted to ask you too, like, if you remember when you first watched it, where did you think Gwen's story was going? Like, what were your theories about not only romance, but just in general? Because she is in this position of being a servant. You know, is she ever going to get to be queen or anything like that?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think that, like, my big thing was, like, oh my gosh, is, like, how are they going to set up the betrayal? Which is something that maybe you should all still maybe be thinking about, if you're trying to compare and contrast the legends to this iteration and you're watching for the first time, because that would be kind of interesting. Secret love child is always a good theory.
Yeah,
and that's all I have.
Okay. Well, that's fine. And I, before we move on from Gwen, we should also obviously mention that she is, of course, a character of color, which is great. You know, I think Merlin, I mean, it could be better, let's be real. But I think for 2008 and British television in general is a little bit better at at race blind casting and incidental sort of diversity. And I think just casting Gwen, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on it because the show doesn't, and I think that's good, you know, but just casting Gwen, who Guinevere, who whether or not she ends up, what ends up happening in the show, she is this fantastic female character in Legends and so iconic. And just saying, yeah, you know what? She's not white. There you go. Deal with it. And just having, and obviously the audience, I think for the most part, totally just rolls with that. I don't think there was a lot of, I hope there wasn't. I haven't seen any like criticism or anything of that decision. So I just think that that's great. Yeah. Do you have anything to add or?
No.
No, it's just great. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Morgana, who is the, we don't meet her a lot, but it's fair to say that she is the fourth sort of part of this little square of leads, teenage leads. And she's Uther's ward. She seems very sweet. She and Arthur have a little bit of a something brewing, perhaps. What strikes you about Morgana immediately, which I like, is that she is criticizing Uther, which when you, I think it helps when you have such an unjust situation and you have a character like Uther who just does things that are so infuriating and unfair. It helps having a character on screen voice that. And I think Morgana, what I love about Morgana is how strong her sense of justice is, how strong her sense of right and wrong is, and how honest she is about it. All these characters are very, very honest and speak their mind. And the way that she talks to Uther and basically tells him off, it's kind of like a relief. You know, it's like kind of a balm on the wound of what had just happened.
And, you know, the thing that struck me most about watching the pilot this time around was kind of the parallels between how Arthur handles somebody talking back to him when Merlin does it versus how Uther handles Morgana speaking her truth. Because they're both rulers or meant to be rulers, but they handle it in completely different ways because Uther basically orders Morgana to essentially get over it and show up at the celebration anyway. So that's kind of like her punishment. Then in contrast, Arthur is a little bit more lenient and he lets Merlin off instead of letting the guard give him the absolute worst punishment.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think that's a really good point. I hadn't thought of that. What did you think of Uther?
I think Uther is, you know, he's really set up kind of like this intriguing bad guy, but you're not really sure why. He's definitely, you know, it's clear that he has power, but I think that in terms of just the pilot, he poses more questions than he gives us answers. Because right off the bat, you are very interested as far as, like, first of all, like, his origin story, but also why magic has been banned for 20 years or why the ban happened 20 years ago. Things like that are very intriguing right off the bat to him. And also this idea that he prides himself as being a fair and just ruler. So you're kind of wondering, you know, whether or not he's going to be a man of his word and we're going to see that side of him, because all we've seen of him right now is one ripping a family apart when he kills the alleged sorcerer, and two, like, the only other sorcerer we've met so far is Merlin, and he's lovely. Three, Morgana doesn't like it, and she's standing up to him, and she hasn't given us a reason not to trust her. So it's kind of like he's got a lot pegged against him in terms of how you see the story written out in the pilot, but it is like, you know, you're still kind of curious as to what his motives are or what they were and why he rules the way he does.
Yeah. It was hard for me watching Uther for the first time because, you know, it was Giles and he was so evil, but I do think he's an intriguing character. I think they do such an excellent job because he is essentially the villain of the piece, right? But he is not, he is villainous, but there's just so much to him. And again, Anthony Head's portrayal helps. He's so charismatic, but
yeah, and then you also, do
even as you said,
you just kind of wonder if like every villain thinks that what they're doing is the right thing, and he's not like a Voldemort. We don't think, you know. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, he has. It seems like he has reasons, like you said. It seems like there's more to the story, and that they are gonna they afford him reasons for his actions, which is what you need, which is, I will say, which the week-to-week villains of Merlin don't always have. They just kill people and look into the camera because they're evil, hashtag. But Uther is not one of those villains. He is very layered, and his relationship with all of these characters, honestly, are very true and interesting to witness. Gaius, what do we think of Gaius?
He's such a mother hen, and we love Gaius. Him. Yes. I think that rewatching the pilot back, Gaius is my favorite. Like, yes. I love everyone else, but Gaius is just like, he's just kind of like this, you can tell he's kind of like a little bit manic. Maybe he spent too much time on his own. Even when Merlin meets him the first time, he's like, I have a note. He's like, I haven't got my glasses. And he's like this curmudgeon-y old man. But it's so great. And they work off each other so well, because Merlin is so easily excitable. And Gaius is kind of like very stern and trying to be kind of grumpy. But also like that underlying feeling of warmth that he exudes. He's just kind of bubbling under the surface. He's just great. I love Gaius.
I love him too. I think, oh my God, I think it's so clear, like you said in this rewatch, just how much he instantly cares for Merlin. And he kind of, here Gaius is this like bachelor set in his ways, doing his thing. And suddenly like a teenager shows up on his doorstep and he has to like essentially become a parent overnight, right? But he rises to the challenge. He genuinely cares for Merlin. You know, he genuinely is like attracted, because I think like that's it, when you have such a personality like Merlin, who is not just, oh, he has a destiny, ooh, what is it? He's genuinely just a likable, lovable human that you know, that Gaius, like you said, his mother hen instinct is immediately woken up. Like, he wants to protect this boy and feed this boy and keep him safe, and it is so adorable. And the relationship between Gaius and Merlin through the whole show is heartwarming, and sometimes like a balm against some of the more like harsher things that happen. And it's set up so beautifully here. Even though when I first watched it and I realized that Gaius wasn't Merlin, I was mad.
He does look like a Merlin would look.
Exactly, yeah, all exactly.
All he needs is the pointy hat.
He does, right, exactly. And finally, just really briefly, I wanted to touch on the final character we meet, which is the dragon that lives in the basement. Don't you wish you had a dragon in the basement? It would be so cool. Who kind of isn't that much. He just kind of says, Merlin, throughout the whole thing. And those sound bites, by the way, will recur throughout the whole show. So get used to them. And then he comes in and he kind of makes a spectacular entrance towards the third, you know, 3/4 of the episode. And he gives Merlin his mission statement and the show its mission statement, which is that Merlin's destiny is to make Arthur a great king. And obviously Merlin does not take that very well, because, you know, how rude. He should have his own destiny. And then he flies away. And that's it. But what are our first impressions of the dragon?
Well, we don't know
his, Do we know his name yet? Maybe you should cut that out. The dragon.
What are our first impressions of the dragon?
Yes.
I mean, he clearly knows a lot. But isn't that very helpful?
Yeah, you're right, exactly.
He just tells Merlin that is the way it is. But it's a great exchange. My favorite thing about the dragon, by the way, is that as soon as, like, Merlin has more questions, he's just like, peace out, bro. And then he flies away.
Yeah, I know. And that's kind of like, that is his, like, signature move. Mm-hmm. Drop some kind of knowledge and then.
Yeah. It's like, truth bomb, out.
That is exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. But he's, like, certainly intriguing. And, but the thing is, too, is, like, I don't know if, like, instantly, the first time I saw the pilot ever, I was like, look, mm-hmm. anytime, like, strange, creepy voices start calling your name, the one thing Harry Potter taught me is to not follow those voices.
Yeah, yeah.
It was very reminiscent of Chamber of Secrets and the Basilisk for me, too. Kind of very interesting mm-hmm. that Merlin's the only one that can hear him. And mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. and he's this chained creature. So I don't know. Do you feel like we can trust him? Did you?
Yeah, totally. I love the dragon. I think he's so cute. It kind of looks like the dragon in a Neverending Story. I trust every word he says.
Of course.
So yeah,
he's probably older than time itself. So he's seen some things.
Exactly. All right, so moving on, we've talked a little bit about, obviously this episode is a little long because we have to like talk about all our first impressions of all the characters and stuff, but as for the episode, some of the things that happened that we want to bring up for discussion, obviously Merlin's magic is kind of positioned as a deviation. Like, not only does he have magic, which is illegal under Uther's rule, but it seems like he has a different kind of magic than, for example, the other magicians that we see in this episode, because it has not been learnt, you know, it has not been studied. It is just something that is inside of him, and Gaius is very puzzled by this. So what do you think about that as a sort of mythology beginning of something?
I am so intrigued by this, and mm-hmm. and it does make you wonder where Merlin's magic comes from. Like, he was born with it, but why? I guess, like, the why is because it's his destiny, but, like, where would probably be a better question to ask.
Why him?
Why him, exactly. But it is very interesting to know that in this world, magic needs to be taught and learned. So maybe, like, you know, people probably still have to have a knack for it, but it kind of, like, it makes it kind of, it sets it up to make you believe that perhaps anybody could learn it. Like, maybe Arthur could learn how to do magic. Rudimentary magic.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And I think that's kind of really interesting, because it's like, what is illegal? I mean, obviously it would be illegal, but what is illegal is not being magic, but practicing magic. And obviously that doesn't mean that if you found out someone was magic, it was because they had practiced magic. So it's kind of a moot point, but it is an interesting distinction nonetheless, that what Uther doesn't want is magic being practiced, right? And that kind of supports the fact that it's something that people choose to do and that they can choose not to do it. And if they do magic, then it's kind of like their own fault. You know, because they know that's not allowed. Not that I'm saying that makes Uther better, but if you kind of take that approach to it, then it's kind of like a little bit less persecution-y, at least here in the first episode. I would not necessarily say that this stays true for the whole show, but as it's presented to us now, it is like committing a crime and being punished for the crime, not being punished for who you are. But Merlin, the wrench he kind of throws into that machine is that this is who he is. It's not something he chooses to do. It's something that's a part of him. So does he deserve to be, quote unquote, punished for not what he does, but who he is? You know, it's a big question, and it's a universal question. It could be applied to a lot of different if you saw this as an allegory, you know, which I don't think would be far off. I believe people have done
and
that.
And I think it also makes you realize, like, it sets up a lot. It sets up also the fact that it's almost like if Merlin can't do it, then a piece of him is, like, dies, you know? Like, he, like, needs... It's not that he does it because he can. It's almost like he needs to do it. It's like an... It kind of reminds me a little bit of, like, the... sorry for all the Harry Potter analogies here, but it's hard not to, you know, relate. But the... we learned about the Obscuruses, you know, and it kind of makes you wonder, like, if Merlin kept all his magic bottled up, would he just explode?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's like a reflex. Like, he doesn't even think about it. It just happens. And they're just fortunate, or we're all fortunate so far, that he's only used it for good or self-defense. So.
And but it is interesting. I think it is also an interesting thing that the episode posits, that, you know, like Gaius says, you are a question that's never been asked before. You know, Merlin is set up to be an anomaly. And they also kind of assume, which turns out to be true, that because he's born with this magic, he has a purpose for it. Like, he's not just born with it randomly, he's born with it for some kind of higher purpose. He's meant to use it for something specific. And again, that kind of ties in interestingly with the banning of the practicing of magic as something that is a prohibited learned skill. And I think, you know, it's kind of like dodging around the question, but is Merlin the only one who has it this way? Would it change, like, Uther's position to know that magic is not something you learn, but something you are in certain cases? Or is Merlin the exception? Like, those are all questions we don't have answers to yet. But I do think that kind of obscures, no pun intended, the situation a little bit and makes it more interesting. And yeah, again, as an allegory to being persecuted for something you can't control about yourself, I think it works really well. And I think that is intentional on the writer's part, for sure. And again, it helps connect him to the teenage, or any audience, really, because I think a lot of teenagers and young adults kind of struggle with, you know, who I am, will it be accepted by the world? You know, my specific humanity, is it okay? You know, that those kind of questions are, like, very typical questions to ask yourself as you're, like, learning who you are. And I think Merlin sort of encapsulates that, uses magic to... stand in for all of those identity questions that you might have, you know, and kind of helps to shift this story out of its specific time and make it more universal. Is that fair to say?
Yes, I really like that a lot.
So I have a question, and this is, you know, I love Hunith a lot, Merlin's mother. Oh, yes. But...
now we get a little glimpse of her.
We do get a little glimpse of her, yeah. More than I remember. But is it, like, what is the logic here? Like, other than if she was guided by some destiny purposes, like, what is the logic in sending Merlin to learn about his magic in the castle where the king... hates magic and will kill him on sight?
I honestly wonder if it's just more like, a sorcerer would have to be crazy to move here. You know what I mean?
Right.
But also, right. I'm kind of wondering if, like, perhaps there's just more that we don't know about. Like, you know, when you get a world handed to you as rich as Camelot, and, like, the outliers of this kingdom that we've now been introduced to, you kind of also wonder if, like, despite the fact that Uther puts up a good front and makes it sound like everything's great in the neighborhood, there's never been a trace of magic since, although there is clearly some because they're rounding up sorcerers to execute. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It also kind of makes you wonder if they're still performing raids. And so Hunith thought, well, they surely will never raid Camelot, so let's put him there. But they might raid Ealdor, and at least we won't have to worry about him.
True. That's true, but that's more like of a practical concern. That's not really like where he can go to learn about himself. I guess that the thing is that the only one she knows who knows anything about magic is Gaius. So she doesn't really have a choice, because Gaius is at Camelot. So it's him that she sends him to, not the castle itself. But it's an interesting... I think it's also just like the story has to work, so maybe don't question it so much. But I always thought it was, and I said this on, we did a commentary for our Patreon as well, which I should have said at the top of the show. I totally forgot to plug the Patreon. Anyway, we did a little bonus commentary for our subscribers there, and I said as well that it kind of, it reminds me of Lord of the Rings, you know, the closer we are to danger, the farther we are from harm, you know, right under the nose of the person that he is hiding from. Not that that helps him, but yeah, an interesting question I had. So obviously the big thing we learn in this episode is that Merlin has a destiny, and it is essentially to help Arthur achieve his destiny. Which is a big blow. Like, we talked about how we would feel if we found out that actually, yeah, you are meant to help someone else become great. That is kind of like Merlin's gift and curse, I think, and ties him to Arthur in a really complicated way, not just because here's a boy that he really doesn't like as a person, but also just because, you know, it's a burden, you know, it's a burden to the essentially be told that you have to stand in someone else's shadow when you thought that you yourself was going to be great. I think that that's a big complication to throw in at the start of the show.
I think that out of everything, this is probably the most heartbreaking, because I can only imagine what it must be like to be Merlin, who thinks, I must be meant for something greater because I have this thing. So, and there must be a reason why. And so then, like you said, to get told that you're meant to use it to raise someone else up that doesn't like you.
Yeah.
To rule a kingdom that would have you dead, that's really disheartening. That's not really the place in the world that you'd want for yourself or for somebody like Merlin. It's a lot.
Yeah. It is a lot, and especially because it's his life that's on the line. You know, it's his, the magic has brought complications to his life. He has had to leave his home. You know, he is in mortal danger. He has to hide who he is, and it's all for Arthur.
And what does that say for the rest of his life? Like, can he ever marry? Can he ever have children? You know what I mean? Like, can he ever just, like, get on with what he wants to do? Or is he always going to have to be trailing Arthur?
Yeah, again, it's a good question, but I think it says a lot about Merlin, who he is as a character, how he handles that, you know, ultimately, and makes him so likable as a character, is because even though he thinks it's crap, that, you know, because he doesn't, it's not that he struggles with his destiny being tied to another person, it's that he struggles with it being Arthur because he doesn't like Arthur. I think that says a lot about who he is. He's not like, but I want the magic for myself, or this is so unfair, or like, he doesn't really react selfishly. He just reacts like a person. Yeah, you know,
it's also kind of like he probably also thinks Arthur doesn't deserve it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm giving my life to someone, and it has to be this guy. Like, it's not that he's rejecting the premise; it's the specifics.
Yeah, because we can totally see that Merlin has no problem standing up for people that need help. You know. That's the whole reason he and Arthur meet in the first place, so.
Yeah. Yeah. So another thing that I generally wanted to touch on, obviously, we haven't really talked about the main villain of this episode, played by Eve Miles. And I think one of the reasons is because it's so standalone that really there's no, like, lingering repercussions beyond, like, what it sets up. But yeah, Eve Miles plays Lady Helen. I wonder, and I really wonder this, like, why they chose, and no spoilers, but they like aging, you know, they like their age makeup on the show, but I really wonder why they made the choice to put Eve Miles in old woman makeup to play Lady Helen, to then have, not Lady Helen, sorry, to play, what's her face, Collins, Mary Collins, and then have her also play Lady Helen, and then have the older Mary Collins transform into Lady Helen. I guess they did it to so they could do that transformation shot, but it's confusing because she looks so fake. Like, when I rewatch this episode, I always think that the old woman at the beginning is in disguise, you know, that she's a young person who has made herself look old. And I think it's weird that they didn't just cast two different actresses, because it doesn't make sense that they look so similar. Because Lady Helen has no connection to this woman.
That's, yeah.
And I just, it really confuses
my brain.
Maybe
they just didn't have the money to hire two people.
Maybe.
But yeah, you're right, because like they could have just done the old woman. If they had hired an older actress, she would have shot the one scene at the beginning, and then would have shot some stock footages of her looking menacing that they'd then superimpose into a mirror.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Like, it's really, really weird a choice that they made there. And it always makes me think that this woman at the beginning is, like, fake. That is, she's not actually the parent, that she's just, like, putting on a show. And, yeah, it's that. So that was a weird choice. But the actual plot, like having the standalone villain in the pilot who sets out, obviously she has this great arc, like a son for a son. Uther kills her son, so she wants to kill his son. And what I do actually, I think it's a little bit of a throwaway, beautiful set design in her little tent there. But what I do love is that montage of her singing at the end when it all grows cobwebs, and it's very, I think it was you said it was very like, what is it called, Sleeping Beauty.
Yes.
And it's beautiful, and it's just a really haunting montage, I think.
Yeah, I really love that.
And
the show takes
so much flack for having bad special effects, but I have to be honest, I don't think they're that bad. You know, I think this was pretty good.
I think that people these days just expect like the Michael Bay explosion, but you know.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, nothing exploded. I did love that. And we also obviously through her, we learn a little bit of backstory, like Arthur's lost his mother, Uther hasn't remarried, he's a ladies man, but he doesn't really act on it. And then, of course, we get that final scene where Merlin is the only one who's not really affected by her singing. And he saves Arthur in this scene. And I have a question. I guess I kind of already know the answer to this. But he just told the dragon, you know, I'm not going to save him. If someone wants to kill him, great, I'll help them. But when push comes to shove, literally, he chooses shove. And he saves Arthur, not once, but twice. And do you think that this was destiny? You know, do you think this was him, his magic being unable to let Arthur die? Or do you think that this was who Merlin is and what he chose to do? Because actually, when it came down to it, he wasn't willing to stand by and let him die.
You know what? I've never thought it was his magic pulling him in the right direction. And I think that the idea of that just makes me really sad, because I want to, in my, you know, like, right, because right off the bat, even the first time I watched the pilot, I just, you get the sense that Merlin has a pretty good moral compass, and yeah, it just falls in line to my tortured, unassuming hero trope that I love so much, that he's done it because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I don't think it was his magic. I was just, I was wondering now watching it back if he would be able to stand by and let Arthur die, even if he wasn't the type of person he was. But I guess it's kind of a moot question, because we're never going to know, because that's not the type of person he is. But we also see like his desire to help others comes into play in the next couple of episodes as well. So I don't think there's any danger in sort of definitively declaring that this is just who Merlin is. But I do still wonder. I still have a niggling question. Like, what would he do, you know? Okay, so I think that is everything. Feel free to, like, bring up everything, or, like, you guys can write in if we missed anything you wanted us to talk about. But we want to get to our favorite lines and scenes as well. So let's start with our favorite scenes of the episode. And just because they're chronological, I'll go first. So I picked Merlin and Arthur's first meeting in the courtyard. I think it is iconic AF. And I think that line, like, do you know how to walk on your knees? Like, you know, it's been like gift a million times, and it's hilarious out of context. But it's also just the meeting itself. It says a lot about who they are and what they are not to each other, which is just interesting, knowing what the dragon says and knowing how terrible of a first impression they made on each other. And yet how much, I mean, Merlin can't stand Arthur, but I don't necessarily think that that holds true the other way. I think Arthur is instantly drawn to Merlin and intrigued by Merlin. and wants to, like, I didn't even know what he wants. He just doesn't want him to go away. You know, it's really interesting. It's fascinating. And it makes you, it skewers the power balance between them a little bit, that it's Merlin who is so dismissive. Like, Merlin is clearly the inferior, like, power-wise, but, or at least, like, to their knowledge. But it's him that kind of has the emotional upper hand, yeah, right? Because he's willing to walk away. And I think that makes it really interesting. And it kind of ties nicely into your favorite scene.
Yeah, my favorite scene is Merlin and Arthur's second meeting. Mm-hmm. I just really like it a lot. You like the, do you know how to walk on your knees? I like the, I could take you apart with one blow. I could take you apart with less than that exchange. I just think it's so cheesy, but so funny. Yeah. I love that. And I just, yeah, that whole scene is really great. And Gaius comes in at the end and kind of, you know, brings Merlin back into the present, even though he's got the upper leg in the fight. And yeah, it's great. I love it.
Yeah. And staying Merlin Arthur themed here for our favorite lines, mine is Gaius saying, "Your destiny's calling. You better find out what he wants." I just like that line. I don't have a reason.
I like that. I like a lot of the dragon's lines, honestly. I really like the "how small you are for such a great destiny."
Oh, iconic. God, yes. That is a beautiful line. I knew you were going to pick that, which is why I didn't.
Did
pick
you?
It.
You know me, yeah. So well.
That is wonderful. And yeah, so I guess I thought I had something else to say, but I can't remember. It doesn't matter. So yeah, this episode ends with Merlin having become Arthur's manservant. The premise of the show has been set up and they are now like tied together. Ironically, Uther has tied like a child of magic to his son. So that's fun and will probably not go well, but we will find out in future episodes. And yeah, that is none of them are happy about it. I love that little moment when they look at each other.
By the way, can you imagine the letter Merlin sends home to Húnith?
Yes.
She's probably dying.
Fake news, guys. Oh my God, that is so funny. But yeah, so there's your premise of the show. There's the pilot. Some fun facts to end this discussion with, where most of them I found on the Merlin Wikia, but some of them I knew just from osmosis. According to Bradley James, it was difficult filming Merlin in the stocks because Colin Morgan is allergic to tomatoes. So weird that they wouldn't just find a different fruit to throw on him, but okay. And there's a little bit of a historical inaccuracy because tomatoes weren't around in the UK until the 1500s. But maybe they were, and we just didn't know because there were no records of them. So there. And this one is hilarious. It's from the Merlin Wikia, which is that another historical inaccuracy. Gaius is seen giving a sandwich to Merlin. However, sandwiches were invented by the Earl of Sandwich in the 1700s.
That's my favorite. And
that is so funny. I didn't know there was an Earl of Sandwich, but that's amazing. It's words, you know, their origins. It's funny sometimes. This episode, I don't know if you picked up on it, but there's actually a Lady Percival, which is fun because, I guess, vague spoiler alert, but it's not really because it's in the Legends, but there will, in fact, be a Knight Percival, which is not a Lady Knight, unfortunately.
Oh, man. That's going to disappoint me now forever that there was never a Lady Knight.
Mm-hmm. I know, yes. Right? Lady Percival, the Knight. It would have been great. Maybe she's his mother. Why do they have the same first name? Is it even a first name? Who knows? Anyway, and the fourth and final fun fact that I had was that, kind of going back to locations, this show was filmed both in Cardiff, around Cardiff in Wales, as well as other places in Wales, and Pierrefonds in France, which is the castle. Pierrefonds doubles as Camelot in all the episodes, and they go to film all the interior and sort of courtyard scenes there. And it's actually, if it seems familiar to you, it is because it has been used in a bunch of different media, like Highlander, The Man in the Iron Mask. It was also in Wizards of Waverly Place as the WizTech Academy. And it's a wonderful, you know, beautiful, clean castle. I understand why they picked it. It's very magical. And I want to go there someday.
Me too.
Someday. And that brings us to the end of our discussion. So we're going to wrap up with listener feedback. We have a couple of tweets and email and a longer message that we received. So do you want to go ahead and get the first
tweet? Sure. Laura says, I may be out of grad school, but getting homework to watch 3 episodes of Merlin is my favorite assignment ever. Smiley face, hashtag Merlin rewatch. That's awesome.
That is awesome. We might assign homework on the show, but it's all going to be fun, we promise. Alejandro Claro says, I'm so excited to finally start watching. I know. For those of you who don't know, we've been trying to put this show together for like a year. So finally is right. We're finally starting. We're excited to finally get started.
Shelly says, will I finally watch Merlin and not just read fan fiction about it? Let's see. And then she also commented on a news story that we brought up in our regular show. She said, actually, T.A. Barron's Merlin series was one of my first fantasy obsessions ever. He came to my elementary school to do a reading and I got hooked. I really hope, Shelley, that you're joining us on our rewatch. We actually, like Selena mentioned before, we talk about Merlin every once in a while on our normal weekly show where we discuss news and entertainment and pop culture. And we've recommended The Student Prince before, which we love. And Shelley has never seen Merlin, but she read that and she loved it. So for those of you that are familiar and are rewatching along with us, just think about that. Think about that being your first introduction to the series. That would be kind of crazy.
Oh my God. That's wild. I think, yeah, I hope, I obviously, if you're listening to this, then you have decided to watch, but I really hope you do, Shelley, because I mean, we kind of touched on this too, is that the fanfic community for Merlin is really, really big and really, really talented bunch of people that write stories. And I think one of the reasons why this show has inspired so much fan fiction is kind of like what we said, is that the even though the story is centered in, you know, this particular time, this particular story, the characters and the themes of the story are so universal that you can lift them up and place them anywhere else. And a lot of people have done that to great effect. You know, they've taken these characters, they put in them into a modern context, or they've sort of recontextualized the story to tell the legends in a different way, or they've done all kinds of extremely creative stuff. Like, there's so much really, really good content out there. But I still hope that you end up watching the original show, because I think you will find that so much of the fanfic stuff, like, it actually comes from the show. You know, the show itself, like, is extremely evocative. And even though it is not maybe, I don't know what kind of fanfic you read, so, like, I don't know. It's probably not going to be that, but it is going to be more closely tied to fanfic than I think you maybe will think it will, because yeah, there's some big, like, emotional stuff that goes on in the actual canon that I think you will enjoy. I hope that helps if anyone else is facing the same dilemma. Then we have a Twitter message from Jewel Gamache, who sent us a private message. You guys can also do that if you have more longer comments. She says, I forgot how much joy this show gives me. I haven't rewatched before, so I have the hindsight this time. It gives me so many feelings. Knowing where their destinies take them is stressful and wonderful, and I can't wait to keep watching. I'm excited to see Merlin and Arthur's relationship develop. I cannot for the life of me remember how this weird mutual crush between Merlin and Gwen dissolves, if it does. I love Baby Morgana the absolute most. My thoughts on the first 3 episodes were mainly emotional rather than observational, but I'm thrilled by this rewatch. Yay, hype! Yeah, so many emotions. Do you want to take the email that we got?
We have an email from Amanda Miller who says, hello, ladies. I'm so happy you're getting started on the Merlin rewatch. It was the first show my best friend and I bonded over, and I'm getting all the nostalgia by watching it again. It's been years. Here are my thoughts watching the pilot. Number one, okay, wait, the show is actually called The Adventures of Merlin instead of just Merlin. Have I really watched 5 seasons of this and never noticed that on the title card? Two, I love how chill Merlin is when talking to the dragon. He's just like, keep telling me more about myself. Who cares that you're a mystical talking creature? Three, I forgot how sweet Gwen is. She was always one of my favorites. Can't wait for more of this ridiculous but great show and listening to you guys discuss. Happy recording, Amanda.
Yeah, it's called The Adventures of Merlin. It's also called Merlin. I don't remember if it stays on the title card throughout the series.
I feel like it's, but I'm pretty sure it doesn't. Season 3.
Yeah. Yeah. Around the time when
the
boy becomes a man.
Amazing.
Yeah. And I know you had something you wanted to bring up. You had some, some personal feedback.
One of my best friends, Andrea, who used to write for Hypeable, also has been on Hype and a bunch of other podcasts in the network before. She is a friend at work named Beth, and right before, she had no idea that we were doing this rewatch, and right before we started our rewatch here on Hype, she texted me asking me for help to convince her friend Beth to watch, and her friend actually did start watching, so naturally I told Andrea that I needed updates because Beth was texting her as she was watching, and some of it is pretty great. So let me see if I can pull up this text message chain that we have here. After I helped her convince her, she said, it works. She's watching it right now and live texting me. She keeps calling Merlin ears. I don't know why it's so hard for her to remember his name. It's actually the name of the show. And then she also said that Beth said, magic is banned. Poor Merlin's gonna get locked in a cupboard under the stairs. And then later she texted me, is Colin small? Beth keeps saying how small he is, but I guess she meant he looks scrawny compared to Arthur.
Oh, no.
And then she said,
I don't think he's that small either. Okay. No, he's taller than me.
You would know all those times that you probably thought you were stalking him, but really you were like, hey, buddy, this is my park.
I swear I was never doing that.
I know.
That's
really funny. Anyway, here's some more from Beth, who says, she's loving all the Merlin sass. Merlin is so small. Look how small he is. I think that's why I'm surprised by all the sass locked up inside.
Yeah, there's so much sass in the show. She's right.
Yes. And then I think she had one more on here. Oh, and then the last one she sent Andrea was, so when do Merlin and Arthur get married? Yeah. See, the shipping is strong right away from this show. So there you go. I'll keep you guys updated if Beth has any more thoughts. But I thought that some of those were pretty funny.
Yeah, I thought that was too. That was good. She should feel free to send.
Yeah, I'll tell Andrea that she has an open invitation to send us her train of thought.
Yes. Oh my gosh. So thank you so much to everyone who wrote in. If you guys want to contribute as well to our discussion, next time we record, we will be discussing the next two episodes of Merlin, which are Valiant and The Mark of Nimue. Two excellent episodes, especially Valiant. Like, holy crap, that might be one of my favorite episodes of the show.
Really? I love that interesting. Episode so much. All right.
Yeah, I love it. And not just because of the Slitherpuff injury. No, I just enjoyed that so much. But yeah, we'll be talking about that next week or next time. So you can send in your thoughts on that or your thoughts on the pilot as well via email, hype@hypeable.com. You can also send us a tweet @hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram @HypeableHype, on Tumblr, hypepodcast.tumblr.com, on Hypeable, which is hypeable.com. And we also have a Patreon. I forgot to say this at the top of the show, but it's actually very important. We have a Patreon page, which is patreon.com/hypepodcast. And what we do over there is we if you can, you don't have to. These rewatch episodes will appear in the main feed. But we, if you can, then we ask you to contribute $2 every month. And for that, you get a weekly bonus discussion for the regular show. You get 2 videos a month where we talk about something in pop culture. And you also get bonus features related to our Merlin rewatch. So while the discussion episodes will be for everyone, the extra stuff we do, like commentaries, or we're going to be doing some deep dives into the legend. We might do some spoiler discussions if there's like a mood for it. If you guys really want us to talk about like how a certain thing sets up a certain other thing, or discuss like some overarching themes of characters or relationships or anything like that, then that will happen over there. So if you're interested in that content, then head on over to patreon.com/hypepodcast and check it out. For those of you who are patrons, or if you are joining our Patreon, we already have a Merlin pilot commentary. So if you want to watch the pilot along with our sort of initial, this was the first time we both watched the show in like 5 years. So that was a fun time. You can check that out. And otherwise, we just hope to hear you, you enjoyed this first discussion of Merlin, and we will be back both for our regular show. I'm going to Canada for a week, so I'll be taking a week off, but then I'll be back and we will have our Hype 176 up on the feed, and we will have Merlin discussion for Valiant and the Mark of Nimue, and we'll let you guys know on Twitter when you can expect that and when you should have your feedback in. So stay tuned. Until next time, have a wonderful week and enjoy Merlin. We're so happy you're rewatching along with us. We're so excited to go on this adventure with everyone. My name is Selena.
And my name is Pamela.
Bye, guys.
Bye.